Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that thrives on the news and views on our beautiful island, our lovely province, our proud nation, our magnificent planet. I'm Robin Adair, and across town in his magnificent Saanich lair is the man of all seasons who comes riding on an electric bike at every opportunity, the Croatian sensation himself, John Jurisic. And Johnny, we have an action-packed show this week.
Oh, no kidding, Robin. Yes. As I jump right off the e-bike, we have a major political announcement, an update on real estate and where it's heading. But off the top, it's sports. Good, bad, and hopefully not ugly. I've been very active with ECDEV and helping develop the business of sport and recreation on the West Shore. And there's no way I want to see their professional soccer team and its lease at the Starlight Stadium. Negotiations have been underway about the future of Pacific FC after this coming season. Now we've learned the club has met with other municipalities. Tisk, tisk. And Victoria at least is making noises that it would welcome professional soccer at Royal Athletic Park. We've spoken to Councillor Ian Ward from neighboring Colwood, who says he really hopes Langford renews the professional soccer lease.
Yeah, you know, John, there has been a lot of grumbling going on out on the West Shore. People who feel that too much taxpayer money is going to a professional team, it should be going towards recreational activity. I think there has to be a balance. There's a lot of value added that comes from having Pacific FC out in Langford. They don't want to lose that. And it was good to hear from Ian Ward. We had a comment from him earlier on the Rumble Room, and we'll be hearing an extensive interview with him about all things Colwood, and that'll be on a future show. But now we turn to a different issue, John, on the different type of playing field, moving from grass to ice.
Ice hockey, to be more precise, Robin, the Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada. What a 2 to 3 days of activities. It came, it saw, and it conquered Victoria over 3 days. Thousands took in the sights and sounds as Victoria became the stage for hockey games across the country. Victoria has a proud tradition in hockey. In fact, we actually won the 1925 Stanley Cup with the Victoria Cougars. I was, you know, only a couple years old. We beat the Montreal Canadiens at the old arena where Oak Bay High School stands today.
Yeah, you know, John, that's brings back a lot of memories. Back in 81 or 82, I was a new reporter at Czech TV, was sent on an assignment to talk to two retired police sergeants. I believe one was from Victoria and one was from Oak Bay. Both of them had been rink rats back in 1925 at that very stadium. They had both seen the Stanley Cup. They saw George Vezina in goal for the Montreal Canadiens, and yet Fred Frederickson and the Victoria Cougars won that game. And also, as it happens, one of them a couple of years later was in the building and pulled the alarm for the fire trucks because the arena went on fire, and he pulled the alarm. Fire trucks came. They couldn't do anything about it, and that arena burnt to the ground, and that's where Oak Bay High School is today.
Those are great stories. Wow.
So we have all this tradition, and it was great to see the people, thousands and thousands of people downtown. Czech TV, of course, played a big role in the Victoria Cougar junior hockey team back in the 1980s. That's when I arrived, the year that the Victoria Cougars went to Memorial Cup, and they were led by a future NHL Hall of Famer in goal, Grant Fuhrer. And I was speaking just this past week to Victoria Sports Hall of Famer Alec Robertson, who I used to work with, and he was there for hours just taking in the atmosphere. Ended up having a good long visit with Bernie Pascal, who used to do the sports in Vancouver at BC TV, Brian Burke, a controversial, colorful manager at the Canucks, Toronto, and all sorts of things was also there. And a former Victoria product, a great from Victoria who made it in the NHL and has stayed in town, is Jeff Courtnell, and he was also there. So super atmosphere. Congratulations again to John Wilson and the outstanding team of volunteers who worked so hard for an audience. I believe they estimated up to 9 million people tuned in over that weekend to see basically a great, great showcase of what Victoria has to offer. The Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, big success. And John, we need more of these showcases because I think it's something Victoria does so well.
We certainly do. And some folks are likely surprised that Victoria showcased hockey out on the West Coast, in the rain, in the sun. No, we have a very, very vibrant hockey culture. Love your stories, Robin. Maybe we do a show on the Rumble Room with all of these stories and personalities. It's great to see Victoria shining in this kind of sports showcase, just like we have in the past with the Commonwealth Games, World Curling Championships. I think there were some major world soccer championships held here as well. In rugby also. So great to see. But now it's time to swing over to yet another hot topic, a defection, or some might say transfer, to the Conservative Party of Canada, as our old pal, Skeena MLA Ellis Ross, has decided to run for a federal seat.
And Ellis Ross had the curious situation where he was planning an announcement, and then suddenly the announcement was taken over, and it was announced, and he just played along with it, and I think he got good coverage regardless of this. He planned to make a splash. Perhaps he was even going to have his national or new national leader, Pierre Poilievre, at his side. But that news leaked, and his current leader from BC United, Kevin Falcon, ended up standing side by side with Ellis Ross and putting the best possible spin on this announcement.
It's sad and it's happy at the same time. Sad because I hate losing a great colleague like Ellis, but happy because your message and your fight for LNG and natural resources is going to go to Ottawa, where it belongs to make sure that we've got people fighting for Indigenous and non-Indigenous folks here in British Columbia. So, Ellis, congratulations. I'm going to miss you, though, buddy.
Thank you very much. And, Kevin, hey, I really appreciate all the support you give me, and I especially like what the BC Liberals did for First Nations over the last 16 years. This is why I joined the BC Liberals in the first place. Independence, which makes a strong economy for everybody in BC and Canada. So thank you very much to the BC Liberals. It was a tough decision. It took me over 6 months to make it.
Yeah. And Ellis let me know a couple of months ago, and we both stayed really mum on it. But look, I think anytime we can get a really great person like Ellis involved in the federal government, that's a win for British Columbia too. So Ellis, best of luck, and I'll look forward to working with you when I'm premier.
I think this is a very smart move by Ellis. He was the runner-up to Kevin Falcon in the last BC United / Liberal leadership race. He's reading the tea leaves, which seem to suggest he might have a better shot at a cabinet post as a federal Indigenous MP than if he stayed with the BC United. We'll see. He's taking a gamble. But again, looks like some savvy strategy on Ellis's part.
I think he has a very good chance of being in a government in another year, because I believe all the bets are on right now that Pierre Poilievre is going to be the next prime minister. And here he has this Indigenous leader from the West Coast who has a lot of political experience. It wouldn't be a surprise to anyone to see him in cabinet, so I think a pretty savvy move. And so what are other people saying about Ellis Ross and what he's done here? We asked a former BC Liberal MLA, Sheila Orr, a good friend of the show, what she thinks about Ellis Ross and if she thinks he's making the right move.
Ellis Ross is wasted in this government, sadly. But no, I'm not surprised at all. Ellis Ross wants to do what's best for the country. He really believes that. And good on him. No, I believe that it's going to be a huge loss for the United Party, but it's going to be a huge benefit to the federal government. The system is not the best. It really isn't. And Ellis is a prime example of a very, very, very good MLA saying, okay, I can't do this anymore in this government. I can't do anything that I want to get done, but I can federally. So I'm moving. And I'm.
So is that going to help Pauly have a lot? Do you think this is going to be a situation where Ellis is going to be a cabinet minister?
Absolutely. I think it'll be a huge benefit to him. I really do. He's a very highly sought after man. I mean, he's like I told you, he's a good man. And I will be sorry to see him leave provincial politics. I really will. I think he would have made a fabulous leader, but he didn't win. So, you know, that's fair enough. And Kevin Falcons won. And that's fair enough, too.
Always great to hear from Sheila Orr. We'll certainly have her back again very soon on another Rumble Room. But we're on to our next guest, Johnny.
That's right, Robin. Tony Joe calls it like he sees it when it comes to real estate. He's from Remax Island Properties and knows the market as well as anyone in the business. So let's see what Tony has going on in his crystal ball. Is 2024 going to be buyer's market, seller's market? Is there going to be a market at all? What happens to all those Airbnbs that land onto the market this year? Let's zoom Tony in.
And now, joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room, once again, one of our favorite guests, Tony Joe from Remax Island Properties. And great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
And Tony, we have so many questions. You've written up a forecast for 2024, which was very helpful when it comes to putting together questions. And one of the things you're talking about is this becoming a buyer's market. And the question I'd have is how much of this has to do with the moves made by the provincial government, where they have basically brought in legislation, pushing for a lot more building, and also removing a lot of Airbnb properties. Those hotel-sized condos are now on the market as regular condos. And the question I guess I have about all this, are these new properties selling well?
Well, I think to begin with here, we should talk about the fact that things go in cycles, right? And of course, we had crazy, crazy market for the 2 or 3 years. And it seems like it was so long ago now that we had the inventory shortage and we had the demand, so much high demand, and we had multiple offers and bidding wars and all that kind of stuff. So for some, that kind of feels like that was just yesterday. For others, it seems like an eternity. We knew, though, we knew that the market would change. We knew that it would shift. This is the way things happen. Then, you know, the question really is it a buyer's market? That's a tougher question to answer right now, because as much as the interest rates have gone up and inventory levels are raising, the demand seems to still be there. And it's funny where in most cases, looking in the past, and, you know, I had a chat with the chief economist of the British Columbia Real Estate Association on my program a couple of weeks back. And we were talking about the fact that generally speaking, when rates are up, the market softens, prices go down. When the rates are down, it goes the other way. It's just that teeter totter of activity. But right now we're at this point where interest rates they've not receded, and they probably won't. They definitely won't back down to the 2% rate that we were at, you know, when things were crazy. But rates are higher, and yet prices haven't really changed. And I think one of the things to consider is it a buyer's market as far as are there more things to choose from? Yes, 100%. And this is great, by the way, because back in that time where buyers had nothing to choose from, they were forced to jump in. They had to write offers unconditionally. They had to pay $100,000, $400,000 over list. I had one that was $400,000, by the way. So that's not a figure that I'm just picking out of the air, right? That's the reason why the government implemented this whole rescission period, the right of rescission, where people have 3 business days to decide, right? But nowadays, people can take their time. They can make their offers conditional to inspection, to financing, to all of these things. So it is definitely a more balanced market. It's not leaning towards the sellers. But when people think about a buyer's market, what they think about is, are there deals? Can we get good deals?
But aren't there deals perhaps on some of these very small properties that originally were not intended to be places that people live full time? They were designed, I think, when the people that built them as basically almost glorified hotel rooms. And now they're saying, we don't want Airbnbs the same way. Have those properties suddenly come on the market? And now people that couldn't get into the market now can.
Yeah, by the way, I sort of disagree with that narrative about how building, specifically the Janyon. The Janyon comes up a lot in the media, where they're 280, 300 square foot units. That's where all the short-term vacation rentals were. The building was pretty well short-term vacation rental. And there's been a lot of owners that have said, well, the Janyon was never built for that. It was never built for full-time use. You know, it was always best used as short-term vacation rental. I don't necessarily agree with that, because I look back at the Mosaic, which is a building, 1061 Fort Street. It was a government building that was converted. That was about 1999 or thereabouts. And all of those units were 300 square feet. That was before short-term vacation rental, and people lived in them. So I do think that they are fit for habitation. You know, who are we to decide if someone needs 600 square feet to be comfortable? Some people are perfectly happy.
Well, I wasn't putting a judgment on that so much as I was just saying, somebody who couldn't buy a condo up until now, they can afford to get one that's only 200 or 300 square feet. Is that possible? Is that what we're saying in terms of affordability?
Yeah, oh, for sure. And by the way, when I said we, I wasn't talking the three of us in this room here. I'm talking about, like, you know, this is what you read, you know, letters to the editor, you know, stuff like that. People are saying that.
Tony,
I mean, sorry, John.
Yeah, that's okay. I, you know, the three, I'm going to contribute to. Yay! First of all, before we get to too much deep into these, quite great to have you back.
Thanks, John.
So fun chatting with you.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Yes, thank you. Boy, I've just recovered. So many of the questions that we're having here will have been answered in some of our other questions. So bear with me. Bear with me, audience. Thank you very much. When interest rates began to climb last year, it was warned that a lot of buyers who got their mortgages at very low rates were going to have a tough time holding on to their homes when they needed to renew their mortgages at the bank. Have many people actually lost their homes or had to sell their homes because of interest rates? And you've sort of answered this, but let's get a little deeper into this. Do you believe rates will come down this year, and maybe to what level?
Okay. I'll answer that one first, because I'm actually not really qualified to estimate whether or not rates will go down. We all just listen to what the economists say and Bank of Canada and all that. And it feels to me like the message has been that rates will have to come down. And it seems like people are counting on a rate adjustment downwards, kind of the later half of the latter half of 2024. I agree with that as well, too. Right. I mean, the Bank of Canada is always looking at inflation levels and all that kind of stuff, cost of living. So I do agree with that. I feel that they will go down. It's important for people to remember that, or to know that the 2%, 3%, even 4% interest rates, that was a point in time that we'll probably never see again, you know, in this generation.
But are people losing their homes? Have you had people in your experience, in your circle, losing homes over this last year or so because the interest rates have popped?
Yeah, no, but it's early yet, right? Because we think about the peak, like peak real estate in Victoria, and actually it's true in most places too, would have been around April of 2022. That's when our average house prices were the highest, right? Mm-hmm. People bought homes at that time, right? And of course, the interest rates were lower as well. If you assume that their renewal date will be 5 years down the road, we won't really know until closer to 2027, right? What we have found, though, is that people on their open mortgages, you know, when we talk about the trigger rates and people's payments not being able to keep up with the interest rates that have increased, and the protracted amortization rates. So people now with, you know, 50-year, 60-year amortizations, it's a little bit of a concern, right? The banks, of course, don't want to displace people. You know, they don't want to foreclose on people. It's expensive. It's a process that's not, they're trying to find ways to keep people in their homes. So in a sort of long roundabout kind of way, my answer is no, I have not seen people that are in trouble. Do I think that there will be? I think we're going to see maybe in 2026 or 2027, there could be some problematic situations. Mm-hmm. I would be more concerned if I felt that prices would drop a lot between now and then, and I kind of don't. And especially if the rates do go down, lower half of 2024, I think prices will remain the same, if not maybe potentially even inch up a little bit. So that gap from the high of April 2022 to that point in time, I don't think it'll be as ugly as people are concerned about.
It's interesting to me that the government has just spent, this is the provincial government, the David Eby government, as they move into an election year, which is upon us, have spent big money on modeling because they've changed the legislation and they're going to be pushing through a lot more building and development, and they're going to go around municipalities, the Airbnb, and they're saying they're looking at 5 to 10% decrease in the price of a home over this next decade because of their policies. And yet we still have this flood of people from the rest of the country that want to live out here on the West Coast. Yeah. So I guess it's a balancing act between these two forecasts.
Well, but you know, I mean, this is the original question that you asked me as well, too, about these short-term vacation rentals. Yes, we will see more of these in the marketplace. Yes, there will be more options. There will be more opportunities. We know, like, our foot traffic and our activity on the smaller condos in the downtown core are definitely softer even right now. And I am assuming that come May, that may even become a little harder because that's when the short-term vacation rentals are banned as of May of this year, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a lot of people are still using their units as vacation rentals because they had pre-booked them. So there's no need for them to sell or go to market. I think we'll see more come May. And getting back to your comment about a 10% price decrease, I think it's entirely possible that we could see an adjustment like that in specific segments, like the micro unit segment. But that's not going to be for the detached single family. In fact, there's been kind of more demand, more inquiries of us of, now that vacation rentals aren't allowed downtown, we're thinking of putting one in our house. So we need a house that enables that. So suddenly there's going to be more demand in the detached houses.
Tony, building upon Robin's thread and sort of the comments around some provincial policies, the province is now considering taking away municipal oversight on development to speed up approval of housing across BC. Okay, so this is a province-wide thing going on. And so now let's localize it. This has largely been endorsed by places like Victoria, but oh my, with a ton of resistance from other communities that want to maintain their lifestyle standards. They don't entirely want families moving in or whatever. Langford certainly used to lead the way in all of the South Island for new housing, if not the province. And now we know there's an anti-development council that was elected a year bit ago. So where does the West Shore in specific sit today regarding new construction? Has it in fact slowed down? And do we have that template happening elsewhere in the province?
Well, you know, West Shore has always been that place where, I mean, it's kind of is the last area in the region that has land that can be developed. So the reason why all of the new developments have happened in the West Shore, I mean, you don't find them in Oak Bay. You don't find them anymore in Saanich because it was completely built out in town. Everything is happening in the West Shore. As an observation, my only concern about what we've seen in the past year in the West Shore is there's been more development sites for sale than I recall seeing before. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is where a developer has put an assembly together and gotten it all the way up to the you know, basically shovel ready, and then they're deciding to sell. So, you know, this may have more to do with uncertainty about the future because, you know, a developer, when the shovel's in the ground, they're starting to build, they're not sold out and cashed out for 3 or 4 years. So, you know, the concern there, I suppose, would be what if we can't get our money out? You know, what if the market is worse? All that kind of stuff. But, you know, again, getting back to the West Shore and Victoria, the West Shore remains where all the development is going. And I think a lot of that has to do with the previous councils some would argue that it was too much, I guess, and maybe that's one of the reasons why the council changed at the time, right? But it's really where all the innovation is happening. Like I live in Oak Bay, and I know, like, we pay attention to what's going on, and I wondered about Oak Bay and these provincial changes, how municipalities like Oak Bay would handle this, because nobody likes being told what to do. Right. And that's what's, now that being said, oh my goodness. Like, would we love to see a world where development permits happen quicker and less red tape and less, maybe staff intervention and less cost? Yes, please. Right. And to that end, I sort of think that the provincial government has done a good thing, but I know it will not be without its pains in all the municipalities.
I got one more question for you about this rapid change in strategy and development and building, and we're seeing it in places like Victoria, Vancouver, Surrey. I mean, it's plans for rapid growth, and let's look at Victoria in particular. There's some huge buildings that are being, and developments that are being proposed and look like they're going to pass muster, because this council in Victoria is very pro-government. I think the majority of people on that council are very much endorsing what David Eby and his government have in mind. And what I'd say about that is it's great to have more properties and more availability for people to live in the city, but do we have infrastructure to keep up with all of this? I'm talking about roads and all the other infrastructure that's needed. And I mean, it's a concern that I think a lot of British Columbians are having, is that so much is getting built. We don't have the infrastructure to keep up with it. I know that that was one of the big complaints in Langford. And I know that's been a complaint in Surrey and Vancouver. So it's not just on the South Island. It's universal that we're not keeping up with the needs once we build these buildings. Is that something you, as a real estate person, is concerned about? Because obviously you want to have happy customers once they've bought their property.
Yeah. I'm going to re-listen to this podcast 25 years from now. And, compare notes to what the three of us talk about here today. I feel that with all of these things in place and all of this new development and the higher density and the, 4 or 6 units on a residential lot and all of these things, I do not believe that we will hit ultimate happiness in the, accommodation stage in Victoria. I feel that if we continue to build more, it's the build it and they will come. I think as we continue to build more, the city will continue to grow. We all know this because almost everyone here in Victoria has come from another place. Right? I think we talked about this last time. There's not too many of us. Too many born and raised Victorians, everyone here has come from another place. Most of the time they have chosen to come here. And one of the drawbacks that people have about moving to Victoria, aside from not finding a general practitioner, for medical, that's a whole other story I'm sure you guys have covered, right?
We've tried.
Yes. But one of the hurdles that people have about not moving to Victoria is housing. Whether it's rental or ownership, the cost, because we know it's expensive and all that. So as we continue down this path of providing more doors for people, I think what's going to happen is we're just going to have more people move to Victoria. Because we can't close the door. And let's face it, both the federal and the provincial government controls on foreign buyers haven't changed a thing. Because prices have not gone down and demand has not gone down. So if ever there was a time that demonstrates that we are not driven by foreign investors, it has been in the last couple of years, because the market continues to bubble even without them.
We're so fortunate to have Tony Jogue join us on a fairly regular basis, along with a number of other real estate agents, leaders in their business, who come on and help us see what's going on in the real estate field. It's such an important part of our economic fabric right across the country, but particularly here on the South Island. And John, with that happy note, we're about ready to wrap things up for another show.
Yes, we certainly are. Because if we don't, I think we're going to be talking for another several hours. There's so much news. Nonetheless, what a fun show. So many topics. Something hopefully for everyone. And that everyone, we want to thank you. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for watching us. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for commenting to us, for being one of the 1.6 million people who have viewed our show since we got this ball rolling 2.5 years ago, Robin. If you want to watch us, and you do want to watch us, you have a number of platforms to choose from. Facebook is our, you know, bellwether. That's where we get all of our activity. Increasingly, however, Twitter is trying to take that mantle. Holy mackerel, are we getting a lot of stuff happening there? And Twitter's easy to share, it's easy to comment, and it's easy to follow. Of course, all of our interviews are on YouTube. We're also on a podcast, so that as you're riding, or clearly, obviously, inevitably riding your e-bike, you can listen to the show. Message for all those folks that have been watching us the last couple of shows. And of course, we're on Instagram and on TikTok. So for now, I remain Croatia's greatest retired water polo star and hockey fan. My name's John Jurisic.
And I remain a steadfast fan of you, water polo, hockey, Victoria, the whole gambit. And as I say that, I also say I'm Robin Adair, and rumble on.